Hello and welcome to another episode of Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers podcast. Before we get into the episode, I want to say to keep an eye out for an offer that is coming to you next week. This is going to be like a super special offer and a chance to get a spot in the next wave of 10 weeks program starting in 2024. At a special price. So like I will be announcing the details of this next week, or if you are part of the newsletter, if you're subscribed, you are gonna get that into your email soon. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. And with that said, let's get into the episode. So the box your narcissistic mother built around you. That's a big episode. It's really important to understand the mechanics of this and work through this to really reclaim your life, to really be yourself and liberated from the influence of the past, really, and your childhood and your mother. This was like a big journey for me. She influenced everything in my life, and not in a very constructive way. So that's why I'm sharing this with you. And I want to say also that this is a little bit of a hands-on episode, as in I'm going to go through like a series of steps with you, and you're welcome to just listen to the episode. If you're usually listening to the podcast while you're also busy doing something else, or you're driving, or you're doing your own things, that's totally okay. You can listen to this, but I would invite you to come back to it in a moment when you're also fully able to give it attention so that you can go through the steps fully. And if you are actually able to give it your full attention now, well, then you can pause and go and get a pen and a journal, because you might need it. And I promise it's going to make the difference. So we said a couple of episodes ago that trying to be someone you're not is the cause of the biggest suffering for a human being. And that's without a doubt. At least I can definitely say that from my own experience. Trying to be someone I wasn't was really, really painful. Even when I wasn't aware I was doing it, the pain was there anyways. I just didn't know where that pain was coming from. But what about being all the things we actually believe we are? Because it's one thing to be someone you're not and forcing yourself into a role, but what if you actually believe you are that way? What about the descriptives and labels we use on ourselves all the time? So I want to slow down on this for a moment. That's where we start. So if you're doing this right now, I'm going to start with the first step. And if you're not, again, just listen, because you're still going to get the benefit by listening to the process. But again, come back to it and do it then when you have the time. So take a moment right now and make a list of all the ways you usually describe yourself with. Whatever comes to mind straight away, so don't overthink it. If you're doing it right now, you can pause the episode and write down and get back to, or you can, as I said, you can get back to it later. What's important when you're doing this list? This is not a list of positive affirmations or aspirations or what you would like to be, but how you actually see yourself. So again, write without thinking so much, and write knowing this list is safe and private to you. No one is going to read it, so you're truly safe to write whatever comes up. So go ahead and do that now. So, okay. Once you're done, have a look through it. There are probably going to be points in your list that feel better than others, as in some things you are even proud of about yourself, and others that might not feel so good, maybe going all the way to feeling quite ashamed of those parts. I want you to know that that's okay. If we were together in a space where we could share with each other, everyone who has been truly vulnerable and real in the writing of the of this list would have that too. Maybe for some, it's even hard to feel proud about anything at all, and shame is the predominant emotion that comes up reading your description. I get that. I've been there. I have been there. So it's okay. It's part of the process, and when you bring awareness to it, that really just changes things, believe me. So now, to bring this a layer deeper, you can go through the list again. You can just read it again. But this time, take a moment to connect with your body. Like, take a moment to really drop in, meaning find sensation in your body. Feel your body. And as you go through the list, feel into your body as you do that. So can you connect with the sensations in your body when you read through the different points? Which feel good in your body and which ones feel not so good? Like bringing tightness, for example, tension, closure, maybe your posture changes when you're reading some, your face contracts, why your eyes doing. Some points on your list could feel like a punch in the guts sort of feeling. Tears might want to come up. So this might take a little bit of time. So again, you can, if you want, you can pause the episode and just take time to go through that. I also want to say that it might not be available for you right now to actually access sensation in your body and really connect with that, and that's okay too. Don't force it, just see what's there. If numbness is what's there, that's also important information. Oftentimes we're disconnected from our body, and we don't realize what words do to our body. And numbness, that's also important to be aware of, because like we really normalize so much in our life. Like we get to the point where words that you would think would have an impact don't anymore, and that's because we've gotten so used to hearing it. We believe it so much that it's like our body just, it's shut down and doesn't feel anymore, and that's okay. Again, that's okay. It's part of the process to feel that you're feeling that way. And I mean, it's not better or worse than other ways of feeling. It's just what you're feeling right now. So if it is available, you might find that even ones that you thought felt good actually create a not so good feel in your body. And that is an interesting thing to get to know about yourself. Because at times we label ourselves in ways that, though apparently positive, do not actually belong to us, and we're imposed by the outside in some way. We're going to go into that. I'm going to get clearer on this point. It was just to give you a little bit of a hint that might happen. And the body knows this. The body doesn't lie. So if you have some descriptive that, like in your mind, that's like a really good thing, but your body's resisting it, then it means there's something there to be explored, to be felt into. And again, that's really important information. When we slow down, we really get to know ourselves really, really deeply. And most of us have not had the chance to do that. We've never really done this. It's like being with a friend someone you knew, maybe someone you see even every day at the office, at work or whatever, or a neighbor you pass by every day, but you never got the time to actually sit down with and really have a conversation with. And once you do, you start discovering that there is quite the person in behind the face. So that's what we're doing today. So once you're done with all this process, circle the ones that don't feel so good. Getting to truly know the way you habitually describe yourself is very important. Most of the time we do that in autopilot, not truly feeling into the words we use, into how they feel on our body. We answer or speak out of habit and following protective strategies rather than truly feeling into the words that we're using. And words are important. Words have power, a lot of power. Which is, again, okay too. I mean, this is what we do. I've done this for eons in my life, so I really know how this feels when you realize that you're doing that and you're like, wow, I've been doing this for so long. This is what we have been taught to do, to be accepted. And not only actually by our mothers, although that was like a big predominant thing, I'm sure definitely was in my life. But if you're listening to this, it was in your life too. And I get that. But also by society at large. You learn that that's just the way society is going to accept you. And you keep that story going. And I did that a lot. Totally unaware of it. Each time I described myself in a way that diminished me, put me down, highlighted how bad and faulty I was, my body locked, tensed, and I was not aware of that for so long. So now that you have your list, and I will share bits of mine in a minute, let's go deeper. And the things you say about yourself that feel really good, that's awesome. Those are important, but we'll just get back to them later. We're focusing on the other ones now. For the others, the ones that feel not so good, too outright, very painful to read, I want you to ask yourself, when did you start feeling that way about yourself? Is there a point in time when it started? Maybe an event that comes to mind. Now, this might not happen to all. If your list got very, very big, maybe just pick one, like three to work with, or even just one for now and then repeat the process. Don't try to do that for like 20 or 30 points all at once, because that's a little bit much. And some will be interconnected, like some you find the origin of one. Usually there's like a few of them that come from the same space, so, or the same event. So just be, pick like one, two, or three max to work with at the one time. So was there a point when it started? It could be an event and it might come to your mind. Did someone tell you at some point that that's how you were? You know, your mother maybe just used that as a label, as a descriptive for you, and that stuck. Or did someone... Again, your mother could be the person. Confirm it for you when you asked if you were that way. So maybe you were the one that thought about it and you asked, and that person just went, yeah, totally. That's just how you are, 100%. So to give you an example, and this may sound like really silly an example, but it's something that has affected my life quite a bit. And a lot of other descriptives in my life came to me very similar to that. So to give you an example, on my list I would have had that I'm afraid of spiders. I think the word is arachnophobe in English. This was a part of me I could not shake off. I actually went to therapy on this. I did NLP and all sorts of stuff to try and, like hypnosis and whatnot, to try and get rid of this because it was really affecting me. I lived in the country and I still live in the country, and there's a ton of spiders. So it was a big deal. It was a big deal. And when I look back on it, I was a child, and in my home in Italy, I came across a spider that was, to my eyes, very big and black and scary. I was like really small. I was maybe five, something like that. And when I told my mother that it scared me, her answer was, "Oh, you must be arachnophobe." And from then on, she used that to describe me to others. And like in my family, everyone kind of had something that they were really afraid of. It was like this story. So for me, it was like, "Oh, wow, now I have this label too. I'm part of the clan as well." And if like if there was a spider in the room, she would definitely say straight away, "Oh, don't ask her to see, don't ask her to go near it. She's too scared, she's not able for it." And so she built an entire story around it that made it more and more true for me. So from a single event, a full story was created and a label attached to me. And again, as I said, I've tried to shake it off in so many ways, and I couldn't. It didn't matter what I did. All this therapy to see spiders in black and white and make them small in my mind and do all of this and see them as funny, whatever. I still was really, really scared. Like run away screaming out the room kind of scare, which, you know, when you're a teenager and you're among friends, or when you're, I did a college that was all very much hands-on in nature, which again, it really affected me. It really was a thing for me. And then a couple of years ago, I was on a Zoom virtual embodiment circle in my little room upstairs, and the room has a really low ceiling. It's a very small room, and I was all cozy in my blankets, like, you know, really settled in for the practices, and this huge spider comes into view at the corner of my ceiling. And it all came back to me, like first the fear and the fact that it is a part of who I am, and then the memory of when it started. I never really thought about it, and I truly didn't want to move from where I was settled, and so I stayed with it, and it was very uncomfortable. But as I stayed with it, I realized that if fear started at some point, it means there was a point before then when I was not afraid. So before that label got attached to me, I was just a child that was discovering the world. And yeah, some things looked nicer than others to my eyes. That was just I was having an experience. And so I connected to that part, and in a matter of moments, I was relaxed again. I actually did 2 hours of embodiment relaxations and session with a big spider in the room, and I even took a photo. If you go on my Instagram account and you scroll back, you need to scroll back a good bit. No, don't do that if you're afraid of spiders, because it's not a pretty sight. But I actually took a photo and wrote a whole post about it because it was such a point in my life. So, all of this to say that things get attached, and sometimes they mightn't even come from someone else. They might come from you because you're a kid and you're learning and you're experimenting. And as a child, you try to identify, you try to find your identity. And so you say, "Oh, maybe this is how I am, or maybe this is what's happening to me." But when that is turned into a story by the people around you, then that becomes you, but it's not really you. And this can have consequences in your life all the way up until now, until you realize that that's what happened. So the ways we describe ourselves that do not feel good, that boxes and limit us, have an origin somewhere in the past. And this can be, we go through, there's like three, four different types of origins that are like the main ones. And one is a descriptive your mother used for you often enough that it became yours. You know, like she just kept repeating it until she convinced you that that's just how you were. And if it's your mother that says that, I mean, she's such an important figure in your life growing up that it must be true. She could use sentences like, "Oh, here she goes again with that way of hers. She's just so much like this." She could say this to like people around you when you're there. She could say it to your friends. She could say it to your teachers. She could say something to you like, that's who you are. Nothing you can do about it. You were born that way. That's it. So make it like real final, that that's just how you are. And you start, and this like applies to, you know, you're just a bad child and that's just how you are. You are faulty and that's just how you are. Oh, you're way too shy and introverted to be in a group of people. I'm going to keep you at home. That's just how you are. And so on and so forth. You're just very frail. You get sick very easily. That's just how you are. And so on and so forth. And this descriptive just stick with us and we just carry them in our adult life. And they are really limiting. They feel like a box, a cage. At least that's what it felt to me when I started realizing that that's what was happening. So another way that they can originate is a label that comes from someone we consider an expert. Then this can follow the first. So you get a descriptive, you're a very frail child, you get sick so easily, we need to protect you, you can't do this, you can't do that. And then an expert comes in and confirms this and puts a label to it. And then that gets reinforced and confirmed again by your mother, which just loves that story and keeps it going. Like in my case, it was anxiety and depression, and I felt very anxious and very sad, and I had good reasons. When I look back, I'm like, yeah, I had good reasons. I was never safe as a child. Of course, I was anxious. Like every moment with my mother was like a warpath, like a minefield actually, and I didn't know when I was gonna be put down, when I was gonna be, I didn't know what I was gonna be told. Every time was just like a Russian roulette. So of course I was anxious and depressed and sad, but of course because I could not be myself. So that makes a lot of sense actually. But those labels were confirmed by my mother. She was like, oh, that is who you are. It's in your DNA, it's in your genetics. Your father is like that. I have been chronically depressed because she had. So no matter how hard I tried, there was no healing that would be a forever healing. And I was destined to be like that. And I really kept describing myself, especially the anxiety, as an anxious person for forever, like for the best part of my life. That was the thing. Anxiety was just, that's just how I live. And there's nothing I can do about that. So just to give you an example of how that works. Another way this can come, these labels can stick, is that they're a protective strategy to keep your heart from hurting. We take on some descriptives because they are actually a shield. They're a protection against what we're getting from our mother all the time. And again, to give you a practical example, just because this can be very abstract when we're talking generic, so I'm going to bring bits of my list to this so that I'm hoping this gives you like an idea of what I mean, and then you can just obviously make it your own, looking at your own list. This for me was describing myself as a very practical person, which I actually would be proud of this part of me. So that's what I was saying. You know, sometimes even the positives, they're not actually ours. And that's why in our body, they don't feel very good. You know, I would be proud of being a very practical person. But when I started feeling into my body, it actually didn't feel so good. So that's where the mind can lie, but the body doesn't. So my mother always told me I was very practical, which could even be a compliment. Like, I even took it as a compliment, a rare one. But it would be a compliment if it didn't come with the side plate of that, that that being a practical person meant I could never be an artistic person. I could never do arts. Like she would tell me, you're not the artist type because you are very practical. So this being practical was a limitation. It wasn't a compliment. It was like, it was a box. And it really hurt me when I was younger because I loved arts. I really did. Like I could spend hours drawing. And she would tell me, like, you're never going to be good because you're practical. And look at your drawings. They don't communicate anything because, you know, you're too practical to be able to do that. And I still do love arts. But to protect my heart, I started claiming I was a very practical person. So I made it my own and used it as a shield. So she stopped annoying me about the art because I started claiming, well, you know, I'm very practical, so I don't do art. And I actually did let go of art for a very long time until I became aware. And then I gave myself permission to be both. Because I do have a practical side and I am happy with that. But I am also an artist and I can create amazing things with my writing, with my art. So that's just to give you a practical example and to also bring your attention to sometimes even the descriptive that seem good from a mind perspective, they might still feel not so good in the body. And the more you get trained to feel into your body, the more you get tuned in, the more you do this exercise, you can do it several times and you're going to feel a layer deeper each time, the more you start bringing your attention to those subtleties and you learn more and more about yourself. And finally, there's another way descriptives can originate, and it's an event. So an event, single or repeated, that was traumatic for you. And I invite you to be very open to the fact that this event might be something like that a lot of people would consider really strongly traumatic, or something that can seem super, super simple, but actually for you was extremely traumatic. And I have a long list of those in my life that have originated so many things that I've used to describe myself and that didn't feel good at all. Like, yeah, I can think of so many at the top of my mind now that would make this episode a very long episode. So I'm not going to bore you with all of that. But I'm going to give you an example. That sounds really simple, but it's not simple. Not for me, it wasn't. And so that's really, really important to respect that in your own experience. In my list, I would have had that I hate mushrooms. I really do. I hate mushrooms. I would be so convinced. There are many foods I'm not fond of, but I can make a face and eat. Mushrooms would be an absolute no. It defined me. And I defended this part of me. I would get physically sick if I tried to eat mushrooms. Like, I mean, genuinely sick. It was a real thing. I would tell my teachers that I was allergic to mushrooms so that they wouldn't force me to eat them when I was in school if they had mushrooms in the canteen. And being a vegetarian as I am, oh my God, everyone that cooks a meal for me wants to put mushrooms in it. I don't know why. They feel that if they're not giving you meat, at least they should give you mushrooms. And so this has followed me and affected me massively for a long, long time. And I didn't even think it was such a big deal, but it made me like I had so many people telling me, how is it possible that you don't like them, making fun of me for that. And so it was a thing. So recently I watched a program on herbs and natural remedies. It was a really cool program. And mushrooms were described as super helpful for so much in our body. And I was sitting with my family watching this, like my husband and my kids, and I started crying. I started crying so much. I spent an entire hour of an episode in tears. Grief came over me so much. The idea of allowing myself to feel good about mushrooms was so intense that there was so much grief there. And anger, actually. There was a lot of anger there too. And it all went back to a repeated traumatic experience in my childhood. My stepfather was quite an authoritarian figure. He was in my life since I was two. So he decided that he had father rights over me for sure. And he treated me as if I was his own child, but not in a good way. So he used to force feed me pretty much everything, but mushrooms were a big thing. He couldn't understand that someone could not like them. And I didn't particularly like the flavor of mushrooms as a child. But his behavior reinforced that. So it was like meals were a really difficult thing. And I was sitting beside him. He was at the head of the table. And my mother was in front of me. And she would not do anything to stop this. She would take part of it actually as well. And so I was force-fed. And several times I got sick as a result of that. And I knew every meal was going to be a nightmare. But if I smelled mushrooms from my bedroom, which was not far from the kitchen, I knew that that meal was going to be like twice as hard to go through. And that's where it all started. That's how my body just completely closed. And even the smell of mushrooms was like impossible to cope with. So I decided, after crying for an hour and releasing a lot of grief for my childhood self, that I would befriend mushrooms. I was like, that's it, enough of this. This does not describe me anymore. Now, this is a process. You can't force this and be like all warrior about it. Because if I actually just go from zero to make myself a pot of mushrooms, I will get sick. I will get physically sick. And that is still a thing that happens in my body that I can't just bypass. It has to be kind and gentle process. And so I started adding them, for example, to veggie soups that are like, they kind of mask the flavor a little bit. But I know they're there. And the first soup was really hard to swallow, actually. I had to stay there and just breathe, take a little bit. It's a process of retraining my body to gently opening up. I even, my daughters helped me with that, but I went and bought a blanket, like a super cozy, comfy, gorgeous looking blanket that has all these mushrooms on it as, you know, decorations and drawings. So like to wrap my body in it when I'm relaxing, to help my body get a positive connotation of it and gently, gently work through that. But that's to give you an idea. So like how an event, and we don't know, we go through the motions, and this some very often actually we forget these things because we're not present when these things happen. One very useful protective strategies is to just vacate the body, you know, dissociate, not be there. So things happen and you have no memories of it. But when you start slowing down, you start getting into your body, you start feeling into all these labels and how they feel to your body, you open doors. And sometimes these memories come back and you can pinpoint the origin of where these things came from. Sometimes you don't get to the origin. Sometimes it's not very clear, and that's okay too. It's not a necessary step, but if it does happen, it does help you understand where these things came from. So these, all to say that a lot of ways we describe ourselves which are not helpful and make us feel bad about ourselves, keeping us in a box, are not a part of us. You are not that list in front of you. You are infinite, expanding, ever-changing, multifaceted, powerful woman. And I want you to really hear that. You are not a list of labels. You are an incredible, amazing being that is unboxable, that cannot possibly be described by a bunch of labels. Labels and descriptives that, for all the reasons I've mentioned, you've made your own, are roadblocks. I mean, they limit you and keep you stuck in a role, in a box that is not you, and they're not helpful. And it does kind of go down to one simple question, like, are they true? Are they not true? Do they feel true? Do they not feel true? Whatever. Are they helpful? Because if your life is not joyful, is not full, is not, if you don't feel alive, if you don't feel good in your skin, well, then they're not helpful, and that's it. So how can we go about changing this? How can we go about gently shifting? It is super important to understand that releasing these labels, it's a process, it's a journey. It doesn't happen overnight. Being super gentle and kind with yourself is a key. It's really key. If you force it, you end up creating more tension and more blocks. Actually, your body can close down even more. You know, it's like the mushrooms experience. If I just went from completely hating them to just eating a pot of them, I would get sick. My body would react defensively. It wouldn't open up. No matter how much I'm trying to do positive affirmations and convince myself in my head, my body will not take that. It's too forceful. So it is a process, and it needs to be done gently. So the first step of this process is becoming aware, which you're doing right now, listening to this episode, and doing the list of your descriptives and labels is a part of that. As I said, feel free to do it again, going a layer deeper each time, again and again, how many times you want. Observe yourself. Get to know yourself. Get curious about who you believe you are and why. Why do you believe that? When did that start? The second step is from here, from the awareness. The next step is to start noticing how you speak about yourself. Because when you become aware of the labels, then you start noticing when you use them. So notice when those labels and descriptives that don't feel good come up. When do you use them? What's happening around you when that has to come out? Like, do you feel unsafe? Do you feel threatened? Are you trying to get approval, to get validation, attention? How do they come into the conversation? Or even when you're on your own, how does that happen? And without judgment, because we've had enough judgment, I think, in our life. We don't need any more of that. There might be a part of you that wants to judge, but just tell that part that this is not the time. Notice with curiosity, as you would, as I said, as you would if you were getting to know someone, like your neighbor you haven't ever spoken to, or someone you see every day, but you haven't taken the time to be with. So you would be curious. You would ask questions. Do that with yourself. Befriend yourself. The third step is to start feeling the effect those words have on your body. So tuning into your body and connecting with how those words feel inside your body, how your body feels and reacts when you use them. And this is works in two directions. There is the, your body is feeling a certain way, and then you use the word and your body reacts to it. Feels like closure, feels like, oh, it's a punch in the gut. Or your body is feeling tensed and closed because there's an unsafe feeling, there's something going on in the people around you, whatever. So your body is already feeling that tightness or whatever sensation that is present, and then you use those words. So it's like they're both aspects that you start tuning into when you tune into the wisdom of your body. And again, observe. A lot happens within. And by slowing down and observing, we get to learn a lot about ourselves. So a lot of this process is actually about slowing down with yourself and observe and get curious and observe some more and get a little bit more curious again with a very open mind and heart. The fourth step, it's about the use of words. How you use the words. So once you've become aware, you notice how you speak about yourself. So you're not trying to change anything in these steps. You're just noticing. You're learning about yourself. So there's no point in changing anything here. You want to see what it is that you do habitually in autopilot. You want to become aware. You want to start noticing how you speak about yourself. You start tuning into how your body feels in those moments. Now you can start work on the words that you use. And I am not talking here about practicing positive affirmations. I have been advised very often to use positive affirmations. I've actually even done it for a couple of years. And to be honest with you, they never worked for me. Maybe they work for you, and if they do, that's okay. Just keep going. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I'm bringing my own experience. And also, I've heard too many women that I've worked with say the same, that they didn't work for them. So I'm not going to advise that, because it's not true for me and for the experience I've had with women so far. Affirming something that you do not believe is true can be pretty much just lip service, and also it can actually bring more closure in your body. That's what I was noticing about myself. It's like when I affirmed things that to a real deep body cellular level I didn't believe, my body actually resisted quite strongly to it, and so it creates more closure. So there's a way I personally found that works better, and I'm going to use that as your step four of this process. And it is softening your words in a way that feels softer to your body. So again, tuning into your body in all of these is really, really key. It's part of the practice. It's part of retraining the system. And I'm going to give you examples now of how to do this, how to soften your words. These are examples, but you can of course make them your own using the words, changing the words in the way that feels best for you. These are not formulas that you have to repeat exactly as I'm saying them. It's purely to give you an idea of how the process works, and then you make them your own. So if anxiety, for example, comes with a tense belly, okay, you can say, I'm a very anxious person, or even you could say, I feel anxious right now. Those affirmations reinforce the tension in your belly. And even to say, oh, I'm not very anxious at all, when what you're feeling inside yourself is a heap of anxiety, that actually also will reinforce the tension in your belly. So instead of saying, I feel anxious right now, you could try and say, a part of me feels anxiety right now. If you're describing yourself, instead of saying, I'm a very anxious person, you could say, a part of me can feel anxiety in determined situations. Or, a part of me can feel anxiety when ... like when I'm in a bunch of people that I don't know, for example, or when I'm in bed at night. Does that feel a bit softer? Again, check in with your body. So if, and you can substitute that anxiety with anything else that comes to mind that is part of what you're feeling or part of how you describe yourself. Another example, instead of saying, I'm very practical, which can feel limiting, it did in my case, you can say, I have the capacity to be very practical when I want to be or when the situation requires. That gives possibility. It's not limiting anymore. It's a capacity you have. I have the capacity of being very practical when I want to be, but I also have the capacity of being very artistic, for example. Or that was part of my example, but that really helped me. Another example, and one I've heard often actually, is I only function well in an emergency. This was one I was using quite a bit on myself, and I also heard many women actually refer to this, you know. When there is like an emergency situation that requires them to just switch on, they function really well. But to say that you only function well in an emergency is very limiting. It's implying that when things are quiet, you're not able to function, or you get lost in too many thoughts. And that is a fact, like you're stating a fact, I only function well when in an emergency. So try saying instead, I have a great capacity to work well in an emergency situation. I've yet to train my system to work as well in quiet times. I've yet to train my system. This leaves, can you feel the sense of possibility that these words leave available? And it's not as strong as a positive affirmation. I am great in at quiet times, or I am a super artistic person. If you don't believe that, that is going to bring closure. But if you leave it open as a possibility, your body can go, oh, yeah, well, I can take that. That's not as strong. We can work with that. Another example, this was also one that comes up so much, and I've used it, and I've been told this, not just by my mother, it's been like something that has affected so many of my relationships, and I felt really faulty for this for such a long time, so I want to put it there, and it is, I am too intense a person, or which feels very similar, I am too sensitive. So those two, yeah, feeling emotions supposedly too intensely and being too sensitive, okay? So instead of saying I'm too intense a person and I am too sensitive, you can try to say a part of me can feel emotions very intensely. And that again, it's a lot softer. A part of me can feel emotions very intensely. A part of me can really feel into situations, tune into, can empathize with others. You know, it's a part of you. A general point is that every time you're changing an I am with a part of me, it makes it a lot softer, because when we say I am, we're identifying with that statement. The entirety of our self identifies with that statement. When you say a part of me, it's a part of you, because it is ultimately a part of you. There are indeed many parts of you, many aspects to you. It's in your very nature to be many things at the one time. And also, it is in your nature to have the potential to train in many different aspects. So if you are indeed someone that feels emotion very intensely, you can train to regulate. You can train not to suppress, not to distract, but you can train to alchemize those emotions. It can turn into a real gift, actually. And I speak from experience again, even on this. I can feel emotions very, very, very intensely. So I've been through quite a lot of pain because of that. And feeling like that was a fault, and labeling myself as too sensitive, being labeled by others as too sensitive, and so on. So we can train. So whatever we feel we're not yet mastering, we can train. As it happens, as a daughter of a narcissistic mother, you've received a very specific training from a very young age. And it was a training that was not very helpful or conducive to joy and well-being. You were trained in believing you're not enough. You were trained in believing you fit in a box and that's where you're going to stay for the rest of your life. You were trained to feel hyper-vigilant and super anxious about so many things. There's a lot of training that went on. And I know it's not conducive to joy and well-being, but it's training nonetheless. That's what it is. It's like our system has been trained that way from the very, very beginning of our life. And so that's many years. But this is good news because it means you can retrain your system. If you have been trained one way, that means you can retrain it. You're not like that. You weren't born like that. You were trained that way. So you can change that. And you can do that with curiosity, kindness, commitment, and devotion. When you bring those to the table, you can train in anything you want. So what if the day I said I was scared of spiders, my mother simply hugged me, told me it was okay, that it sometimes happened to her too, and then she learned about spiders with me, how useful they are, and so on. How would that have changed things? What if when you felt sad, instead of labeling you as depressed, your mother sat with you and breathed in her belly while you let your sacred tears flow? What if when you wanted to create something, she allowed you the space to express, even when she didn't understand what you were doing? What if when you were angry, she allowed you the space to move through it, showed you healthy ways to release your anger, told you it was okay, maybe asked you why? What if when you felt blissed out and excited, instead of telling you to be quiet and that it's ridiculous and too much, she laughed and celebrated with you? How differently would you feel about yourself now? Connect with that feeling within you. Can you find it in your body? If not, that's okay. It might take a few goes at this. Moving through layers of sadness, anger, grief, numbness, that's okay. Don't give up because it's there. I know it's there. I've been through all of that. I really do. It is still possible to feel differently about yourself, to feel expansive, good, happy in your skin, and so on. And it might not feel available right now, but it is there for you. And the key is in accessing that mother energy that you so needed when you were little and you didn't get. But access that within you. Access that aspect of you that can hold the parts of you that feel sad, anxious, depressed, angry, even happy and excited. And hold space for all of that. You know, that mother, we said, what if she behaved this way or that way? I know she didn't. But you can be that to yourself. You can give yourself that which a part of you needs now. You can be to yourself the mother you wish you had, in a way. You can do that. When you feel sad, be there for yourself rather than judging yourself for being like that again and again. When you feel fear, tell that part of you that it's okay and that you've got her back. When you feel joy, celebrate with yourself. It's a process, but gently new pathways can open, the system gets retrained, and you get to be more and more yourself, free from any box that was built around you. And for that part of your list which felt good, just write it nicely, make a really good looking list with all the things that you really feel good in your body about yourself, and remember that list is not set in stones, like it can be added to, it's going to be expanding, it's going to be changing, but put it somewhere you can see it and make it a reminder of all the aspects of you that you really like. Celebrate yourself, allow yourself to go, hell yeah, I am this way and I love it, and that's great. And gently in time, even the ones that don't feel so good will be transmuted, alchemized, reframed, changed into ones that feel a lot better. And I'm inviting you to get on the website and access the self-love guided practice if you haven't already. So on top of doing this process again and again, if you haven't done it this time fully, do it again. This is one of these episodes that are going to be listening to again and again, because it's really one that is like turning situations around, turning your whole life around, shifting things really powerfully. So you can use that again and again, and use the self-love guided practice to go with it, to hold the space, to support you in building that container, that to access that mother energy in you that is there and is going to help you. So with that, I'm going to leave you. Send you lots of love. Bye for now.